You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network and The Conversation with Adam Weber, lead pastor of Embrace Church and author of Love Has a Name.
Hey friends, this is The Conversation. My name is Adam. I hope you are off to a fantastic day. If you are listening to this in real time on release day, I also want to wish you a happy inauguration day as well. Just to state the obvious, some of you are excited about our new president. Others of you are angry. Some of you are over the moon. Others of you are scared. Wherever you are, I simply want to encourage you today to spend some time talking with God. If you're excited, talk with God and how to talk with friends who are maybe upset today. If you're angry today, talk with God about your anger, about your fear. Spend some time talking with God, but more than that, spend some time listening to God. I also want to encourage you to talk with a friend, talk with someone who thinks like you, just to be encouraged to process your feelings, your emotions. If you want to feel challenged, which is a good thing to feel challenged, talk with a friend who thinks differently than you. If you're excited about the president, talk with someone who's scared. If you're over the moon, talk with someone who's angry and just say, hey, I just want to understand. I just want to listen. I just want to hear where you're coming from and hear what you have to say and what you have to think. So spend some time today listening to God, but also to the people around you. I just want to encourage you today on inauguration today to spend some time just listening to the people around you. So that's my word of encouragement. In today's conversation, I was able to sit down with Holly Hayes, and Holly has a powerful story that involves drug abuse, it involves neglect, it involves sex trafficking, as a kind of a word of warning. If that's something that's close to your story, I just want to let you know that I am going to be talking about those things with Holly. She has a powerful story. She ended up starting something called the Sanctuary Project, which helps employ women who are coming out of sex trafficking by giving them dignity, by offering them a job, and they build this beautiful jewelry. If you are a gal, I want to strongly encourage you. I'm going to tell my wife about it as well. Go to the Sanctuary Project. They just have some gorgeous jewelry. We'll do a link in the show notes to that. Just a powerful, fascinating story. Holly was amazing. I feel like she's one of those people who's going to become a friend of mine. We just hit it off. I know that you will be encouraged. If there's somebody that you know who needs to hear this episode, please share it with them. Leave a review. Send a text message. Somehow, some way, get the word out about this. But as always, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation. Well, I'm here with Holly, somebody that I just crossed paths with for the first time today. Holly, just want to welcome you to the podcast today. Huge blessing.
Thanks so much for having me. This is such a joy.
Yeah, I'm already jealous of your life. Before coming on, Holly gave me the tour with a laptop walking around her place. And so I might just up and move to Austin basically. But Holly, I'm going to start by just having you share your story. I'm really curious even personally to hear it. So if you want to start even kind of hometown originally, parents, and go from there, and I'll ask you a million different questions.
Yeah. So I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and both my parents were intellectuals, both professors, and grew up in a home that I would say worshipped achievement and success and intellect. Did not grow up in a faith-filled home. That was actually quite rare in the community I grew up in. And so I didn't really encounter any people of faith very much in my life in San Francisco. Very early on in my life, very early in my childhood, there was some sexual abuse and from a caretaker and after school program that I went to. And I think that set the stage in my life for a lot of what was to come and just implanted a trauma that I didn't know I was carrying. I actually didn't remember the abuse, and it didn't come out until I was in middle school. And it came out around the same time my parents were actually going through a divorce. And so this sort of normal life I had thought I was living, where I had, you know, the parents and the sisters and the normal suburban house and, you know, just this, the quintessential sort of American dream life, all of a sudden blew up when this abuse came out and when my parents were getting divorced. And that happened when I was 13, 14 years old, right at this very formative moment in my young adulthood or childhood. And so I very quickly discovered drugs and alcohol, and drugs and alcohol became the solution for me very quickly. I immediately felt a sense of relief when I put alcohol and drugs in my system. I actually felt okay. And so for the beginning, for the first year or so, I actually thought, oh, this is a great solution for all the anxiety and the fear and the trauma that I've been living with unknowingly. All the pressure that I had put on myself from years of trying to achieve in school and in extracurricular activities. And all of a sudden I felt like, oh, I can escape. I can escape it all. And so I chased that escape. And by the time I was 15 years old, I was drinking and using drugs every day. By 16, I dropped out of high school and got into my first abusive relationship. I actually had my first of 5 abortions at 16. By 18, I was getting arrested all the time. I was selling drugs. I was in violent relationship after violent relationship. That had become the norm. And at 19, I met my trafficker. And I thought he was my savior. I mean, I saw him from across the room and he saw me from across the room. And it was like our trauma just bonded with each other instantly. I think he could see right through my soul. He could see that I was addicted. He could see that I was insecure. He could see that I was leading with my sexuality. He could see that I had severed relationships in my life and that I was vulnerable to everything he had planned. And very quickly, we developed an intense emotional bond and relationship, and he started to isolate me from friends and family. And then about a year, well, a few months into the relationship, it became quite violent. And there was these highs and lows that came with the violence, where it was like, this is the best relationship of my life. He's making me feel so loved. And then there was this extreme violence and infidelity, cheating all the time and things like that, that then were an extreme on the other end. So I was feeling this extreme tug of war in my heart and in my soul constantly in the relationship. And about a year into the relationship, he started suggesting that I was so valuable, that my sexuality was so valuable, that he wanted to start selling it to other men. And at the time, I think I had my sense of self-worth and value had been so beaten down that this actually sounded like a step up in life, you know, rather than to just be giving away my sexuality, rather than to just be used for my sexuality. Here was a man saying, let's take advantage of your sexuality. Let's take control of the situation and let's get you making money doing this.
Holly, really, really quick. How old were you at this point?
And I was 19. Yeah.
And I always think like there's this picture of like, when I think of like someone going into sex trafficking, I think of like a 10-year-old girl being like picked up at a park or something like that. Not the case with you. Would you have, I don't even know what the question is here. So you're 19. Would you have ever seen it when you first met him leading to this place?
Not at all. And, you know, that's a really good point about trafficking and some of the conceptions we have around it. The vast majority of trafficking cases, even when they're a 10-year-old girl, actually happen within the context of relationship. It actually happens by a known person. The cases where someone is being kidnapped are extremely rare. And I think we saw more of that actually before the invention of the internet, really. Like before the internet, a trafficker or an exploiter had to go out and kidnap children in order to have children to sell. But now they don't have to anymore. They can go on Snapchat, look for the kids who are unsupervised, insecure, looking for attention, develop a relationship with them, and then either through force, fraud, or coercion, get them into this trafficking situation. And so my situation, though it happened 20 years ago, was actually more similar to what we see today, where it happens through a known person. It happens through the context of relationship. The trafficker has targeted that person, but they're not being stolen. They're not being kidnapped. They're being very subtly manipulated over the course of a relationship. And so, I was 19 years old, which is technically an adult, right? I had the ability to cognitively maybe make decisions. But at that point in my life, my addiction was making decisions for me and my trauma was making decisions for me. And so, and then ultimately this man was making decisions for me. He'd encouraged me to stop paying rent on my apartment. So I'd gotten evicted and then ended up having to live with him. And so when he suggested this, I didn't feel like I could say no, because he was giving me a roof over my head, food to eat, a bed to sleep in. And I didn't really feel like I had any other choice. And so that's more common. That's more commonly the dynamics we see in trafficking cases.
Wow. Yeah. That's like the total opposite of what I would have said. Just, I just pictured like, watch out for shady vans that are driving by. Yeah. And not the relationship aspect of things, of just how powerful that is. I'll let you keep going though. This is powerful.
Well, I think it's so important to talk about, because, you know, as parents too, you know, we think there's a lot of parents out there who are concerned about kidnappings and things like that. And we'll think very much through a decision about whether we're going to let our child go and play somewhere unsupervised. But what we're not thinking about is, are we letting our children play unsupervised online, on the internet? We will send them into a video game and let them play that video game, knowing that there's people in there that can chat with them. We will send them onto Snapchat and say, sure, you know, or TikTok, have fun, you know, put up your little dances and no big deal. And yet sending them into those environments unsupervised, that is where we're seeing trafficking actually happen. That is where we're seeing the danger. And so in the same way we would be afraid of sending our child to the store at night unsupervised and tell them to watch out for a white van, we should not be sending our child online unsupervised. And I think it's so, so important for parents to hear that, because a lot of the rhetoric out there is around trafficking being this you know, stolen out of their window at night idea. And then that leaves a blind spot for what's actually going on and how traffickers are actually catching women and girls. And they know, they're smart. They know who the vulnerable ones are too. You know, I think my friends are these loving parents who are very involved in their children's lives, and they're worried about their children being trafficked. And I like to comfort people by saying, I don't know if this is a comfort, but you know, traffickers are smart. They're looking for girls that are unsupervised. They're looking for those girls in the foster care system. They're looking for those girls who don't have the parental love and supervision, because they know it's an easier target.
Yeah.
And so this is where we really have to come around our kids in the foster care system, our kids who are economically vulnerable, our kids who are children of color. This is, you know, it's 60% of trafficked people are people of color. And so I think we have to remember who we need to be protecting here is the vulnerable. It's those in poverty. It's those who are unsupervised and who don't have the love and care and support in their lives that make them the most vulnerable, which was the case for me with my addiction, right? That has made me into this.
So Holly, you kind of got to that place where he began to suggest it and then began to be trafficked. And I'll let you pick up a story if you want to from there.
Yeah. So I kept getting drunk and high and not showing up for the jobs he lined up for me. And I ended up getting kicked out. He had other women in his life and didn't have any time for someone who wasn't going to show up for these jobs. And so he ended up kicking me out, and I ended up homeless. And in February of 2001, I was on the floor of a public bathroom, and I was just bawling and watching my tears hit the floor. And three words fell out of my mouth. I said, God, help me. And I'd never believed in God. I had had no experience with God, no relationship with God, didn't even know any God people. But somehow in that moment, that was all I could think to say and pray. And that very night, I ended up meeting someone who got me into a recovery program. And I've been sober since that day. So that was February 11th of 2001. It'll be 20 years in February. And he helped me get a place to sleep and get out of that relationship and started me on a path to this whole new life. So I knew that there was a God. I knew that I had cried out to this God, and this God had rescued me. I still had no idea who that God was, and started on a journey of just looking everywhere the world tells you to look for God. Started with Oprah, read every book Oprah suggested, tried The Secret, tried affirmations. You know, I tried yoga. I tried crystals. You know, I tried everything the world says to try. Never would I have imagined.
Did you try essential oils as well?
Oh, yeah, sure. Of course. I mean, I tried it all. And in every case, it didn't line up with my experience, right? I knew I hadn't applied the right combination of oils to receive this miraculous recovery. I knew I hadn't affirmationed my way into it. I knew I hadn't summoned it in some way. I knew I hadn't done anything to earn it or deserve it. I had been in the depths of sin and despair and pain and loss and cried out to God and in a moment was gifted with a whole new life. And none of the gods I tried matched that experience. And so every time I tried a different God, I came up short and saying, this can't be the God, this can't be God. Because I cried out to God in a pit and was given a new life.
Yeah. Wow. So from there, I'll just let you continue on. So bring us from that point to where you are today. I'll let you keep going again. And thank you for sharing all this.
Oh, it's a joy. Thank you. So I had met someone who told me that God spoke to her through the Bible. And I'd never had someone ascertain that to me before. I had never had someone with boldness say that they heard from God. And I was really curious. And I had this Bible. I'd actually stolen this Bible. I thought that was hilarious at the time. And so I had this stolen Bible and I thought, okay, I'm going to check this out. And I said, okay, God, if you're real and if you're in here, speak to me. And then I put my finger in the Bible and I just tipped it open to a random page. And my finger landed on the book of John and something called 8, a chapter called 8. And then I started reading. And it was this story where a woman was caught in the act of adultery and brought before Jesus. And the lawmaker said that the law says that we should stone this woman to death. What do you say? And he turns to the crowd and he says, let he who is without sin throw the first stone at her. And one by one, each of her accusers, each of the people in the crowd walk away until Jesus is left alone with her. And says, does no one condemn you? And she says, no one, sir. And he says, then go and leave your life of sin. And he forgives her in that moment. And I think in my mind, I had always assumed that Jesus was this judgmental, stone-throwing, wrathful God. You know, yeah. I had met Christians before in the picket lines as I was walking into my abortions, right? I had seen them. They were the people with the signs saying, calling me a murderer and literally throwing these plastic fetuses at me. They had these little plastic fetuses and this is your baby. And, you know, and so that's what I had in my head as what a Christian was.
Yeah.
And here I meet Jesus in this very first moment with him. He shows me that that's the opposite of who he is and that there's space for me at the table. And so immediately it was so clear that this is the God that goes around to bathrooms, picking girls like me up off the floor and giving them a whole new life. Yeah. It was so immediately clear that this was the God who had saved me. And I fell in love with him. And I started reading. I didn't know you could just like go to a church. I thought a church would burn down if I walked in. So I figured I'd have to like read the book first and make sure I believed everything in the book. And then maybe I like see if I could like, I don't know, like get anointed with the right essential oils and then I could go in. So I read the book. I started in the New Testament and I read through the New Testament, was just blown away by story after story of God's faithfulness to his people, him loving people like me. And then I went back and read the Old Testament and realized this is just one massive love story. This is just a story of a God who so loves his people, who so loves me. Yeah, and I won't give away the ending if you haven't read it, but there's this victory in the ending that that was irresistible, and I wanted this life and this faith, and I still hadn't been to a church yet, and I knew I wanted to be baptized, so I went on a cruise that stopped in Israel because I thought I had to be baptized like in the Jordan River because that's how they did it in the Bible, and so I like got off this cruise and got out on the like parking lot and tried to find a taxi cab that would take me to the Jordan River to be baptized. So I landed in Haifa. If you don't know, like, I don't, we'll link this in the show notes, but I landed in Haifa.
Exactly.
And I was trying to find a taxi that was willing to take me to Galilee, essentially, to be baptized. And that's not close. And so I was walking around. No, everyone was looking at me like I was crazy. And I finally landed at this one taxi cab and this sweet man named Ramsey. And And he said, I'm actually studying to be a tour guide and I know exactly where I can take you and I would love to take you. And then after that, I'll take you into Jerusalem and we can spend the day just touring Jerusalem and I'll get you back here to Haifa. I had one day. And so in one day, Ramsey took me to the Jordan River to be baptized and then all over Israel. I got there and I didn't know you had to like have like a pastor there to baptize you. I just had a Ramsey. And so I was like, I don't know what to do. Like I was asking everyone, I was like, will you baptize me? Will you baptize? Do I baptize myself? Like what happens? I thought there'd be like men in white robes here to baptize. Like I just figured I had a very different vision of it, right? And so I was just standing by the banks getting very sad because no one would baptize me. And finally this sweet man with this big Russian Orthodox cap started walking toward me and had the cutest smile and said, I heard you wanted to be baptized. And I said, yes, no one will baptize me. And he said, I assume you are not Russian Orthodox. And I was like, I don't know what I am. I just read the Bible and I love Jesus. And he was like, I will baptize you. And so I was baptized by a Russian Orthodox priest on the banks of the Jordan River that day. And after that felt like, all right, I think I'm ready. I think I can go into the church. So yes,
we'll have a in our show notes. We'll have a link to Ramsey's Instagram account.
Yes.
And the Russian priest with the hat.
I don't know him. So Ramsey and I are still friends. Ramsey and I are friends on Facebook and Instagram. So we can link Ramsey.
No way, Ramsey, I love you.
Oh yeah, and he has a tour company now in Israel. I mean, I was like his first tour company, and he loves this story too. So we will link Ramsey. But
oh my gosh.
Orthodox priest is. I've never found him again. So if you're listening right now, if you're listening, Igor.
Igor, the man with the cute smile and the funny hat. Yeah, no.
Yeah, find me.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
No, Holly, I feel like there's a ton of things. Do you care if I just kind of ask you random questions? So I look back at when you, at the beginning of your story, being sexually abused, maybe two questions, and I feel like I have a few of these. You don't have to go into depth or whatever. Two things. Is there something you like would say to parents to protect their kids from getting sexually abused? And then maybe the other part of it is what do you wish could have happened at that point after being abused? Like what was, if you could go back to that girl, what do you wish could have happened to you from after that? I'm talking.
I think about that all the time, Adam, because I have a little girl now and she's 16 months old and it's like, I think it's every parent's biggest fear.
Yes, right?
And I think about it all the time. I think about it all the time. I don't know. I wish I had an answer. I will say that there were some warning signs that my parents ignored. I wouldn't take my coat off when I came home from their place. And then I wouldn't wash myself. This is very graphic, but I wouldn't wash myself in the bathtub, down there. I was like afraid. And so I think like those little warning signs were things that my parents just thought were funny quirks. But in retrospect, probably should have been paid more attention to. I mean, I am adamant about like vetting everyone you're involved with in terms of care. You know, I'm a big fan of churches having several people supervising children. Because the church is not immune from this happening. In fact, I know many people who it happened to them in the church, which is even more heartbreaking because, you know, gosh, then it's linked to faith and relationship with God, which is like the worst thing that can happen.
The worst.
Yeah. And in terms of like, what would I wish had happened? You know, I don't anymore. I have seen how God has so radically used and moved me into a life of purpose that I no longer wish it hadn't happened.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's, and that's the greatest gift because in this world, we will have trouble. but take heart. He has overcome the world. And so my greatest hope is just that things are going to happen. Things are going to happen to our kids, right?
Yeah.
You know, we can't, I remember the first time my husband was cutting our daughter's fingernails and he cut her skin and she started to bleed and I bawled. I mean, she cried for like 30 seconds. I cried for 30 minutes because I was like, I can't stop her from experiencing pain in the world. I can't protect her. She is going to get hurt. She is going to cut her finger. She is going to get her heart broken. I can't protect her. But what I can do is offer her a Jesus that can take every single cut, every single bruise, every single heartbreak, and use it for his good and his glory. And so if it's you, and if it's something that you that's happened to you, and you're wishing that something different could have happened or that something different could have been done, I think the greatest healing I've had has been in accepting that it happened. And now I get to use it to help others heal. And now I get to use it to say, look how far I've come from someone who was broken, beaten, abused, to someone who gets to bring life and healing and wholeness today because of Jesus.
Yeah. What a place of healing. I feel like you get to a place of healing when you're able to look back at those things and say, hey, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, but it's made me who I am today. Maybe a slightly different question for you, Holly. If someone has been sexually abused or they find out their son or daughter has been, any word of advice as far as like what, like how to help like that, the healing process, any thoughts there?
Yeah. You know, I spent years in counseling and trying to kind of heal there. But the best thing that ever happened to me was when I was taken to the cross. And I'm going to explain this.
Yeah.
Because I think as parents, we have access to something really powerful at the cross that we can teach our children. And as Christ followers, we have access to something really powerful at the cross. There was a moment, I did this inner healing thing called SOZO, which is like a charismatic healing, inner healing thing, but I do it in my Presbyterian church. So it's everywhere you can find. And really what it is just it's a meditation where you meet with Jesus in prayer. And so I got the opportunity to meet with Jesus in prayer around every trauma I'd experienced in my life. And the first one I visited was the sexual abuse because I knew that that was so formative. And in that moment, I was face to face with Jesus in this meditation, in this prayer, in this visualization, if you will. And the woman I was working with and praying with said, now ask him to show you an image or speak to you about this. And he showed me an image of me laying on the ground as a child. This has just happened to me. And outwardly, I was covered in like cuts and bruises and scars and stains and sort of you could see on my outward appearance of my body what had happened inwardly.
Yes.
And Jesus was standing over me and he was gleaming white and righteous. And he outstretched his arms like this, like in the shape of the cross.
Yeah.
And in that moment, he pulled with one breath every single scar and stain and bruise and cut off of my body and onto his body. And I got to see it visibly on his body as he stood there with his arms outstretched. And then in the next breath, he breathed his gleaming white righteousness down off of his body and onto my tiny 3-year-old body laying beneath him at the foot of the cross. And in that moment, what happened was I actually saw what he did on the cross. That he didn't just take our sin. He didn't just take all those things we've done wrong. He didn't just take those times we messed up. He actually took all sin for all mankind for all time onto his body on the cross. And so when I saw it in that light and that the exchange that happened on the cross, that not only did he take all of that, but he gave us his gleaming white righteousness. I realized that there is nothing he can't heal. There's nothing he can't take. And that this thing that was done to me, it was already dealt with on the cross because God exists in this outside of time space, right? Where he dealt with that 2000 years ago on the cross. He knew it. He took it. He knew everything that was going to happen and he took it. And he knew everything that I was going to live up beyond that, right? He knew all the sin I was going to walk in, but yet gave me his gleaming white righteousness anyway. And so I think when you know, and maybe that's too much for a child to understand, but I think a child can understand Jesus taking pain. And sometimes we're so quick to talk about the cross in a way where Jesus just takes sin.
Yeah.
And he'll take everything bad you do on the cross. He took our sin, but to talk about it in the language of Jesus takes our pain on the cross. He takes our hurts on the cross. He takes our brokenheartedness on the cross. I think when we understand that and when we understand that aspect of what he did, that there's a lot of healing that can happen there.
Yeah. That's incredible. And I think that's something, regardless of how you've been hurt or what that's looked like, whether it's being sexually abused or betrayed in marriage or with a business partner or whatever it might be, that is so powerful just to walk through that. Holly, maybe you touched on it earlier about just even being wise as parents around sex trafficking in general, of again, kind of, hey, you're watching out for shady looking vans, but then you're allowing your child to do X, Y, and Z online. Any other things that as far as a parent perspective of, hey, here's just a few things just to be wise in the area of parenting, whether it's from sex trafficking or even drug and alcohol abuse.
Yeah.
Just any thoughts or wisdom there?
I think loving your kids, you know, I mean, I think we underestimate the power of just loving our kids. You know, when a child is well loved and understands their value in the family, you don't see them seeking attention from strangers on the internet, right? And so I think, you know, one of the things that's really interesting we've seen, you know, you would think that there would be a common denominator between girls who've been trafficked in estranged relationships with a father. But it's actually the opposite. It's actually estranged relationships with a mother. Not that that's the opposite, but there's a special relationship between mother and child that I think protects children and women from seeking attention, especially sexual attention, outside of marriage or outside of the way God intended it. And so I think, you know, just loving your children well. And then if you can, if you have the ability or the resources to do it, loving other children well, loving children that don't have that well. You know, loving the children in the foster care system, loving your neighbor's kid who you know their parents are going through a divorce and they don't have the supervision right now, or their family unit's being torn apart, loving those kids, pouring into those kids. You know, there were families that loved me when my parents were going through a divorce that were very helpful for me now in trying to have a successful marriage today.
That's powerful.
Because I'm able to say like, oh, I got to see that in the Lang's marriage, or, you know, like I know what healthy marriage can look like because there were families that came alongside. So that would be kind of the best place to start, is just loving well.
That's so good. I think we often miss that. It's like we're trying to give our kids the American dream, and then we just miss out on like putting our phone down and like actually paying attention and engaging with our kid. It's like I want to do something for my kids. Maybe I need to buy them this nice thing or get them into a certain school. All the while the kid is like looking at the parent, just saying like, I just want you to love me. And I have this thing that I want to tell you about, yet you're always too busy to listen. And I'm like, I don't even know if you do love me, because it just seems like you're always angry at your work and all this. I think sometimes it's the most basic things that we miss. Kind of last practical question. So I know even in South Dakota, sex trafficking is actually really high. I've been told, like, number wise, it's almost off the charts. And even there's the oil field up in North Dakota that I know kind of is a sex trafficking ring as well. And even in my neighborhood, we were talking before coming on, there's a lot of like alcohol abuse, drug abuse. What's maybe just like, what can a person do? Sometimes in my shoes, it almost feels hopeless.
Yeah.
Of just like the amount of brokenness with addiction and whatever else, and knowing that it has to be happening in my neighborhood as well. Like, anything that we can tangibly do, whether it's sex trafficking, I just think about the couple of people who met you in your dark moments and just even what they did for you, like practically speaking, any advice on all that? That's a big question.
Yeah. You know, I think there's a lot of people who are brokenhearted about sex trafficking right now. They're hearing about it, maybe even for the first time, and it's breaking their hearts and they're wanting to do something, but not everyone is called to this work. And I think it's important to remember that this is dark work. It's hard work.
Yeah.
And it takes a very specific understanding of the complexities in order to walk with these women or girls who are coming out of it. And so not everyone is called to do this work. not everyone is called to walk alongside girls who've been trafficked. And so in some ways I want to say, please don't, you know, please leave it to the professionals and those who are called to it, right? Please leave it to survivors who are, there's networks of survivor leaders in throughout the United States and other nations who are doing this work together. And we understand because we've walked through it, right? And so we're able to have an impact in these women's lives in the way, someone who's just heard about it and is brokenhearted about it can't have that impact. But here's what you can do. There are incredible organizations all across the United States, all across nations across the world that you can pour into, that you can volunteer with, that you can give resources to, that you can come alongside and partner with and empower them to do the work. Make sure your police department understands this issue and make sure first responders know what to look for. Hospitals, nurses, police officers, doctors, all of those people need to understand and be educated about sex trafficking, about addiction, and so that they can respond appropriately. And so as a voice in your community, the best thing you can do is be a squeaky wheel for those things and make sure that you're talking with your local anti-trafficking organizations and make sure they're providing resources to first responders. If they're not, get with a national organization to make sure that national organization gets information to first responders in your community. So really just being that squeaky wheel is probably the best way to help. I do advise people not to just like try to start rescuing girls out of trafficking rings, because this is complex, and there's incredible government organizations doing work alongside NGOs that we are working on this. You know, we are taking rings down. There's progress happening, and progress has been happening for the last 10 years that people don't know about behind the scenes. And so just because this is coming to light now doesn't mean there's not people who've been working hard on this for the last several years, for the last more than a decade, getting laws changed, getting girls help. And so really just partner with those organizations.
That's so good advice. And it feels almost like the opposite of what I expected to hear. I almost felt my wife saying, listen to every word. Cause I'm like, let's go break up like sex trafficking rings. My wife's like, if she was here, she'd be elbowing me right now. Like, make sure you listen to what she's saying, Adam, you know, cause I think that is the natural response of like, okay, I need to go do something. I need to go do something in that way. And Holly, just thanks for some practical steps, even on that end. I want to end by having you to share about Sanctuary Project. Tell us about your book. I'm just going to kind of unleash you to share about what you're working on and what you do and how we can be a part of what you're doing too.
Yeah. So when I came out of sex trafficking 20 years ago, the biggest issue I had was around finding meaningful and dignified employment. Because money had been so linked to this exploitation, I didn't feel like I had any skills to offer the world. And it took years of rebuilding and trying and failing and just landing in hard places and having to and beating myself up because here I was traumatized and not able to just show up for this job with this tough boss or whatever. So really what I have become passionate about over the last 20 years is helping women transition when they're coming out and finding that meaningful and dignified employment. Because I think employment is the biggest piece to rebuilding in a lot of ways. It's one thing to have resources handed to you, housing or, you know, safe houses and things like that. Those are important for a short time. But if someone is going to heal long term, they have to find a new identity. They have to find a new vocation. And so I built Sanctuary Project in February of 2018, and we are a nonprofit community that employs and empowers women coming out of trafficking, violence, and addiction. We have a jewelry line, and all the jewelry is made by our survivors, our community. We're entirely survivor-led. So everyone from our office manager to our social media manager, myself, my operations director, our shipping manager, every single person, including the women in our job training program who are newer out, every single person on our staff is a survivor. And so it's a really special place where there's just so much grace for what we're all walking through together. And you know, all our traumas are different. All our stories are different. We all have different lengths of time out of that life. And so, but on any given day, we're all pouring into each other and loving each other and helping each other walk through life. And we try to be a very grace-filled environment. We say we're a place where you can cry at work, and and that's made for a soft landing place for a lot of women. We've now provided more than 10,000 hours of employment to survivors over the last 2.5, almost 3 years.
It's amazing.
And we were actually just picked up by Target.com. So our jewelry is now available on Target.com, which is so exciting. And they're actually allowing us to fulfill it through our Austin Fulfillment Center. And so all of our ladies are still packaging and shipping all the Target.com orders, which is really exciting. So it's offered more hours of employment for all our women, and just been such a blessing for us to have that kind of ongoing revenue coming in, so that we have more opportunity to give to more women.
That is amazing. That's incredible. We will have links to all of that in the notes of the book.
Under the Israel map. We'll have the Israel map and then the link to shop.
Under Ramsey.
Under Ramsey.
I want to find Ramsey. I need to search. I'll Instagram stalk you. Yeah. No, your book though. Share about your book.
Yeah. So, my book came out in 2017. It's called From Basement to Sanctuary. I share some of my story in there, but really felt passionate about talking about what the church can learn from the 12-step recovery movement that meets in the basements of churches, and everything I learned in those years I spent in the basement looking for God. And then what those in the basement can learn from those in the sanctuary about who God is. And so I really share my journey of coming to Christ there. More details on Ramsey are in the book. So if you love Ramsey, stay tuned and pick up a copy of From Basement to Sanctuary, and you'll get more details on Ramsey. But yeah, it's a love letter to the church. I am so passionate about the church understanding their own brokenness so that they're able to better walk alongside those who are coming out of hurts. I think there's so much putting on of like a happy face in the church. There's so much choosing joy and so much sort of putting on our Sunday best and smiling and acting like everything's okay. And it doesn't leave room for a woman who, like me, is coming out of a lot of pain and trauma to walk in and feel safe, to actually feel like I can be myself there. And I think there's a lot of churches that will say, you know, they'll have a slogan that says come as you are, but then the expectation is come as you are and don't stay that way long, because we need you acting good, because, you know, our reputation depends on you acting right. And your salvation depends on you acting right, which that's a whole other, issue that
sounds like heresy.
Yeah, exactly. And so what I love about the basement of the churches is they are truly saying, just come, admit your brokenness before a God that you don't have to understand or explain, and allow that God to convince you of his power and his majesty and his glory and his ability to heal everything in your life and heart before you even have to know who he is. And, you know, the 12-step community is a Christian, or it is a Christian, it's Christian tools. It's all, it's all Bible based.
Yes.
But Jesus, this is one of those situations. There was a couple times in the Bible where Jesus would heal someone and then he would say, don't tell anyone I did this. And I passionately believe that the 12-step recovery movement is one of those miracles where Jesus has said, here, take me, here's my power, here's my transformational spirit to heal and redeem, and now don't tell anyone I did this. And so there's a lot of people in the basement who don't know it's Jesus, but it is. And I am also passionate about them finding that out, and how we can love those in the basement well as Christ followers, and share Jesus with them in a way that's compelling. So so that's From Basement to Sanctuary, if any of those things interest you.
Yeah, Holly, that last part was by far my favorite part. Everything you shared, that was so good and such a needed word for pastors, for Christians, for churches in general. Like, gosh, everything you said, I'm like, yep, keep going. So
I'll have to get you the book. You'll
yes. Love it. Yes. No, Holly, just want to thank you for the work you're doing. Thank you for the time today sharing on the podcast. I know it will be an encouragement and also a challenging word for so many of us. You gave us a lot of practical things. And then more than that, you gave us Jesus, which is the most important thing. And so I thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you, Adam. What a joy to be with you.
Thanks for
for listening to The Conversation with Adam Weber. This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network. You can find more from Adam Weber on Instagram and Twitter and at adamweber.com.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.